Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome. It's the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here. Doug Kellen is off today, and sitting in for Doug is good friend Ben Cunningham, founder and president of the Nashville Tea Party. Ben, welcome to the Battleground State Report.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
And so, as our listeners know, when we talk about the Battleground State Report, really what we're looking at, what's going on in the key battleground states that will determine who will be the next president of the United States. We have, if you go to battlegroundstatenews.com, you can see our map that shows 17 states that are undecided. You know, the other 33 are either going to be red or blue. There's very little doubt in those. And really, of the 17, you know, there's probably five or six are most important. Probably the three that folks think are the most critical, the most battlegroundy of the battleground that could go either way are Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And those three, the last election cycle, less than 100,000 votes differential total in all three states. They all went to Donald Trump, and they could go either way this time around. And those are probably the three most important. The other battleground states to look at, I guess in priority, you'd go maybe North Carolina, then Florida, and then maybe Ohio, right? What would you say?
I'd say that. And what's going to be fascinating to me, and I think to a lot of folks, is the Trump campaign is a pretty sophisticated operation, and it's going to be really, really interesting to see what their strategy is with these battleground states. You know, we see the rallies now, and he's getting great turnout at the rallies. He obviously has a great, strong 40% base, 45% base. What is going to be their strategy going forward with these battleground states? Will his tweeting enter into it? I mean, I think his tweeting is so much more sophisticated than most people understand.
People just think he gets up in the morning and says, "Hey, what's on my mind?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
do you? No, but he doesn't. I think it's strategic.
It is strategic, and it starts out, he knows he's going to bait the news media and pull them into it, and it's just going to be fascinating to see how he uses that with these battleground states. I don't think we can trust the polling right now at all. I mean, the polling is all over the place.
Yeah, and we'll talk about one of the polls in a second in Michigan, but I want to talk a little bit before we get to that, Ben. So the big news is the Democratic National Committee has whittled the field down to 10 surviving candidates now that can be in this debate. And who's sponsoring this one? Is it NBC? I forget which one. But anyways, it's a debate. I think it's NBC. And it's not CNN. Boy, what a debacle.
Didn't they decide to have some kind of climate debate? They decided they would.
They canceled
DNC,
that, though. Yeah,
well, the DNC rejected it, and then I think CNN was going to kind of interview the candidates individually about it kind of a faux debate. A faux debate, yes.
Yeah, it's CNN, so if it's CNN, it must be faux.
Yeah, exactly.
So the 10 Democrats who met these qualifications of, you know, a certain number of people that had to make contributions to you and to be a certain in the polls are Joe Biden. Sleepy Joe Biden.
Oh, man.
Spartacus Cory Booker. Pete Buttigieg. I don't know if you know this, but he's gay.
Yes, I
understand
that.
He's married to a man. I don't know if you knew that. Julian.
Common knowledge, I think.
Julian Castro, aptly named. Kamala Harris, Senator from California. Senator Amy, I want to eat my salad with a comb, Klobuchar from Minnesota. Beto, I'm a white man, but I can't stand it. O'Rourke. Bernie, Russia Sanders. Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren, and Andrew, let me give you $1,000 a month, Yang.
Mm-hmm.
See, the only one who's interesting there is Yang, I think, to me, you know.
He is an interesting guy, but at least we know most of these, you know. The when there were up to 20 candidates, I literally did not – I mean, I would look at their faces and I would say, who in the hell is that?
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Now at least we have pretty identifiable faces, and but Yang, yeah, that's his – it seems to be his claim to fame is paying everybody something.
And he doesn't wear a tie, so.
Yeah. And the figures came out yesterday. I forgot who, Heritage or somebody, looked at his numbers, and they were all wrong. He had underestimated the cost of this thing by trillions and trillions of dollars.
Oh, what's a trillion here, trillion there, you know.
And, you know, of course, Bernie says, you've probably seen that clip where Bernie says, I don't know what Medicare for All is going to cost. You know, I don't have that number in my pocket, he said. That was his quote. It was just, it was absurd.
He didn't have much in his pocket.
No.
But he's going to take something from your pocket.
Yes, yes.
Bernie loves to spend other people's money.
Your bank account will be vulnerable.
The other little thing that we see is supposedly there's some momentum behind Pocahontas, otherwise known as Elizabeth Warren. She had a crowd that her folks said was 12,000 in Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the very liberal McAllister College. And on second thought, it was only about 6,000, according to other reports. But still, you know, it's a lot more than Joe Biden can scrounge up.
She is energetic. I'll give her that. I mean, at least on the stage, she's jumping around and waving her arms and a lot more than Joe. I mean, Joe's pretty low energy.
Well, Ben, I just don't know who the president was I was serving with. Anyway, we'll be back. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.
This is the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here, and Ben Cunningham sitting in for Doug Kellett today. And Ben, polls, polls, polls. Of course, you know, 15 months before the November 2016 election, there wasn't a single poll that said Donald Trump would win.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we've got, you know, polls are not really used for the purpose of giving you a snapshot of where everybody is at a certain point in time. They're part of the media plan to create this momentum. And, of course, the momentum is Donald Trump can't win.
Yep.
We've seen this story before, Ben.
Yeah, it's a silly narrative. The man's president. He's got tens of thousands of people showing up at his rallies. The polls were pretty meaningless this time last go around. So it's I think you're right. It's all about creating a narrative, and the liberal media does that. The liberal media, thank goodness for Star Media and all the things that you guys are doing. It gives us another voice.
Yeah.
And it's just so critical. Because the liberals really want to drive us off the political stage. They call us all these names and they say, basically, you're not worthy of being on the political stage. You're all this litany of things, all the names we hear. And the list seems to be getting longer every day that they call us.
Racist! Racist!
Homophobic, sexist, misogynist,
xenophobic.
I mean, they just love it. There's some pleasure center in their brains, I think, that just kind of goes off. And
you're so bad.
It's
you're so mean.
It's just silly. We heard it, you know. It's always been their tactic. I don't know why they think that it works now and didn't work before. But anyway, that's what it is. It's part of the narrative. And the news media has gotten much worse. CNN is just an absolute. I don't see how anybody could watch CNN for more than 30 seconds without hating Donald Trump and his supporters. I mean,
I think you watch it and you either stick to it and you hate Donald Trump or you say these guys are nuts.
Right.
And the ratings show more people say these guys are nuts. So to look at here, we're talking about polls. I guess a couple polls to talk about, Ben. We'll start off with sort of the national polls. And last week, we had the Quinnipiac poll and the USA Today poll and the Economist, looking just at the issue of, you know, how are they looking at the Democratic race for the nomination there. So the Quinnipiac came out, and they show Biden at 52, Warren at 19, Bernie Sanders at 15.
Wow.
Kamala Harris at 7, Buttigieg at 5, and the rest, you know, lower. Yang's at 3, actually. Yang's ahead of Spartacus Booker. Beto, I really hate being a white guy, O'Rourke. Tulsi Gabbard, they're all at 1. Julian Castro at 0, Klobuchar at 1, Bullock at 1. Williamson, Marianne. Aren't you going to miss her? She's not.
I am.
She adds a little comic
relief. I'm
going to
miss her. I'm going to miss De Blasio, Red Bill, all of them. It's just so much fun.
That was Quinnipiac, and USA Today Suffolk has Biden at. This is very interesting. It's a little different. Biden is just. He's still showing up as the leader in these polls, and he's so awful on the campaign trail. But they show Biden at 32, Warren at 14, Sanders at 12, Harris and Buttigieg tied at 6. Yang again, holding strong at 3.
Surging into fourth place.
Well, do you think we'll maybe see a vice president, Andrew Yang?
Could be. Yeah. I don't know. I think there's still an awful lot of people in the Democratic primary who's answering these polls who are holding their nose and saying, Joe Biden is probably their last choice in a quiet, contemplative moment. If you got them alone and said, hey, you know, what do you think about Joe Biden? They'd probably, you know, gag.
Do I have to?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So The Economist had Biden at 25, Warren at 21, not too far behind, probably within a statistical margin of error, I think. Sanders at 14 and then Harris at 8. But again, same pattern, right? Harris at 8, Buttigieg at 5, Yang at 2.
It's so interesting that so many of the candidates have taken Bernie's message. You know, Bernie used to be the flag carrier, carrying the Soviet flag into the primary. You know, holding it high, waving it proudly. But the other folks have basically said, "Hey, we want to be socialists too." And it's just it's amazing that Bernie has suffered as much in the polls. But it's basically because everybody's adopting his message.
Now, just a reminder, in the general election, the popular vote is not how we pick a president. It's the Electoral College. So there's 50 separate battles going on. And, and the ones that matter, 17 battleground states, maybe 6 that we talked about before that are sort of the 6 to watch, which would be Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida, and Ohio, probably. But going back to the national polls, the polls show, the polls where Trump lost by 2 points and yet won the election because he won the Electoral College pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. He lost the popular vote 48-46, but he won the Electoral College 306-232, pretty significant defeat for Hillary Clinton. I'm so sad.
As you went through that list, it takes me straight back to 2016.
Yeah.
And, of course, you can go on YouTube and see all these compilations.
The best moment of all was, 1 o'clock at night, that election night, when if you see the guys at CNN.
Yes.
Donald Trump is president. my head's exploding.
Rachel Maddow about to
cry. it was just such wonderful television. All of the young Turks
spewing expletives.
all of the Hillary Clinton supporters in New York, just tears, crying. It was just so much fun.
And they've never gotten over it.
Haven't gotten over it. Been fighting it ever since.
And I was amazing.
That night I was up, watching, and I got half a dozen calls at 2:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You were right. And because remember,
you were right.
I had predicted that he'd have 300 Electoral College votes.
Yep.
So I predict that in September because I saw what was going on, particularly with the refugee issues in Michigan and other states. And I literally, nobody else was was saying that.
Nope.
Nobody else. And
very, very few people saw it, and certainly very few people.
But you know
the
reason why I knew.
How was that?
I knew.
Why did you feel that level of confidence?
Because the month before he'd appointed Steve Bannon as the CEO of the campaign. I knew Steve would win. Mm-hmm. I absolutely knew because mm-hmm. I knew that he saw what I saw because I was writing at Breitbart, as you know, and the refugee issue was so big in Michigan and Wisconsin, and you know you had refugees were coming in and they were bringing diseases and just they weren't assimilating and people didn't like it.
Right.
And it was we captured that and that's why I knew.
Do you think that issue still resonates as much?
Not as
it
much.
Does?
No, I think it's more the border. I think it's more the border right now, and you want to know why it doesn't resonate?
Why is that?
Because President Trump honored his campaign promises. Mm-hmm. See, it mattered then because there were 75,000 refugees coming in a year. They were coming in from hotbeds of terrorism like Somalia and Iraq and Yemen and Sudan, and the president promised he would cut that all off, and guess what? He did. He cut it all off.
Right.
The absolute number of refugees is down from 75,000 a year to 20,000 a year, and virtually zero refugees from those hotbeds of terrorism. So he honored a campaign promise. Cutting that out as a significant issue means there'll be others. But that now, had Hillary Clinton won, we would have been tripling the number of refugees from hotbeds of terrorism. Boy, that would have just been fantastic, don't you think?
Wonderful.
Hey, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy with guest host Ben Cunningham today.
State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy here with guest host Ben Cunningham. We're talking about the polls, and I wanted to talk about the general election polls. And again, it doesn't really matter that much what, you know, who's winning or who's losing. At the national level, what matters is what's happening in these six key battleground states. And because, you know, President Trump could easily lose the popular vote and win the Electoral College by a far margin. Because I think, you know, California, which went like, you know, 60-30 against him last, I think is going to be like 70-20 against him this time.
Oh, they're getting worse every
day.
Yeah,
getting worse. But Quinnipiac, which is not the most reliable poll, it's kind of run by a bunch of college kids, really, who kind of frame the questions a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And that's everything.
Yeah.
When you frame those questions, you get the result. It's kind of like the global warming, their models they use.
Yeah.
You get the result you're looking for.
Well, they did the national election. They show Biden leads Trump by 16 points, 54-38. Sanders leads Trump by 14, 53-39.
What?
I'm just telling you what this poll says. I don't believe it either. Warren leads Trump 52-40. Harris leads Trump 51-40. Buttigieg, I don't know if he's gay, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I heard that.
Identity, politics, Democrats. He leads Trump 49-40 in this poll.
I mean, that's ludicrous. Yeah. That is, on the face of it, it's ludicrous. It's just nobody would believe a poll like that at this point. It's crazy.
It's trying to set the narrative.
Absolutely.
So in Michigan, there was a poll from Epic MRA, and it shows in Michigan it has Biden. Now, Michigan matters. 16 electoral college votes, big difference. I mean, literally, it could be Michigan that could be the difference. How Michigan goes. That's why, you know, we've got the Michigan Star up there, right? Because mm-hmm. you want to follow what's going on in Michigan. In Michigan, according to Epic MRA, Biden leads President Trump 51-41, Sanders 48-44 over Trump, Warren 49-43, Harris 46-43. 43, all over Trump. Harris and Sanders, probably margin of error. And I haven't really jumped into those polls. And I don't even want to spend the time looking at those polls, really, because why?
I can't help. I mean, we saw in 2015 polls, the same kind of phenomenon. And I just can't help but believe a lot of people simply don't want to tell the pollsters that they support Donald Trump.
Exactly.
I really do think has a major effect on the polling and the polls. And like you say, how they ask the questions, how they're framed is huge. The polling, frankly, I just don't trust it at all at this stage.
Yeah, I don't think it matters until, probably a week after both parties have their nominee. That's my view, right?
Yeah.
Which will be what? Late August? A year from now, probably, right?
Yeah, once we get into the...
Have an actual name.
Convention season, and we have an actual name, and people are
actually... A real person.
...tuned in. A real person.
So that's why we look at this. Okay, and then it's not like the generic, I hate Donald Trump. It's, do I think Elizabeth Warren is better than Donald Trump?
Right, exactly. Now, then you got to make the existential choices about what's the future of America.
Right, or Joe Biden. It's a specific comparison. It's
right.
A choice. And, I think, and there's a lot that will happen between now and then. And really the key question is, it's not how the national polls will look in a year. It's how Michigan and Pennsylvania, the Michigan poll, the Pennsylvania poll, the Wisconsin poll, it's about how those particular polls will look. And how does it play in, of course, the old saying was, well, how will it play in Peoria? That's not the, I use the, because I love, as you know, alliterations.
Yes, indeed.
I am Mr. Alliteration. it's really, how will it play in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Mm-hmm.
See what I did with that?
Yes. Yeah, beautifully done.
How will it play in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is one of the three most important battleground states?
Yeah, and I think those are exactly the kind of areas where you're going to get this polling problem, where you ask people, 6 months before the election, they're going to kind of tell the pollsters what they want to hear. When it gets down to the brass tacks and people have to make the decision about the future of the country, who do you want as commander in chief? Do you want Bernie, who can't even hit a speed bag without it coming back? And have you seen that
clip?
Yeah,
isn't that funny?
That's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny. Bernie almost
got
wiped out by the speed bag.
And who apparently, by the way... is a very rude customer at restaurants.
Absolutely.
Did you see that?
I can believe that. I can believe that.
Well, because he's kind of a jerk.
He is. Yeah. And when Bernie doesn't feel like he has to have turn on the charm, I think Bernie could probably be a real jerk. But, who do you want as commander-in-chief? Who do you want dealing with China? Who do you want dealing with the immigration issue? In 9 months, people are going to start having to make those kinds of real decisions. And it's not going to be a matter of, what does my neighbor think about how I answer a poll or that kind of thing. You're going to be making a decision about the future of the country. And Donald Trump is he's petulant sometimes. He is.
You think?
He is an interesting character.
Yeah.
But we've had 4 years of Donald Trump. We can judge Donald Trump. Up
right.
on the job,
right.
And we can see what he's done, how he deals with foreign powers, and we can make that judgment. And I think when people start making the actual judgment about what's going to happen in the next 4 years in this country, I think people are it's going to be a much different calculus that people are using on the decision making.
And even those people that hate Donald Trump, hate him.
Oh, yeah.
With a passion. And there are a lot of people that hate him.
Yeah.
And it's a style thing mostly, right?
It is a style thing. And people that have called him racist for 4 years, Donald Trump is no more of a racist than this microphone is. Donald Trump's a lot of things, but he is no racist.
A lot of things.
Yeah. And
that's a true statement.
And I think people are going to, this kind of cognitive dissonance that they feel between the news narrative and the real Donald Trump. We've seen the real Donald Trump now for 4 years.
Yes.
He's an interesting character. But we've seen him on the job for 4 years, and we know exactly what we're getting. He's not going to change. Donald Trump's going to be Donald Trump 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 4 years from now. Do we want the Donald Trump that we've seen the last 4 years? Do we want an economy where somebody's there who believes in the free market? Mm-hmm. Do we want somebody who deals with foreign powers as a tough negotiator? Or do we want to go back to this Barack Obama model where, you know, the United States is just one of many countries and we're all part of the global order and we're all going to get along and nobody's going to judge anybody? And, you know, do we want to go back to that?
So I think you really pointed out the key challenge, foreign policy-wise, that America has dealing with China. Joe Biden is utterly compromised. His surviving son, Hunter Biden, got $1.5 billion investment from the Chinese Communist government, basically through the Bank of China, to do this hedge fund.
This issue would absolutely, they would attack any Republican who had done this, and they're giving Joe Biden a pass. The news media we have is lame, and it's all about narrative. And you're exactly right.
And then, of course, you know, can't you just imagine Elizabeth Warren dealing with China?
I can't.
It's ludicrous. I mean, you know, what's she going to say? You know.
They have the same model that she wants.
Yeah, she would say, can you help us make the United States more like you?
Exactly. That's precisely
what
she would say.
That would be her policy.
Yeah. You have a wonderful Marxist system over there. We want to emulate you.
Yeah, exactly. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the key issues here in 2020 Battleground States. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy. Guest host today, Ben Cunningham.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy, guest host Ben Cunningham today, sitting in for Doug Kellett. Well, Ben, they've narrowed it down to 10 candidates on the Democratic side this week, and I suppose we'll have to sit through another dreadfully boring debate. But we don't have to, but, you know, since we're talk show hosts, Ben, you know, we do this so you listeners don't have to do it.
It's right. Painful.
Yeah, it is painful, but sometimes you have a little bit of fun, and we want to look at the also-rans, the ones that didn't make it that list of 10. And I want to start out with kind of one of the most irritating of the also-rans, Bill de Blasio.
Yes.
Bill de Blasio, he's supposedly the mayor of New York City.
Yep.
Now, I'm told, Ben, that people in New York are wondering why he's not doing his job as mayor of New York and running off, you know, to the primary, you know, battle states.
I watched the CBS New York YouTube feed, and it's hilarious, frankly. The people are just really angry. Crime is increasing in New York City. The budget, of course, unfortunately, when de Blasio got into office, he had a big boost in revenue. So, of course, he spent every dime of it. So they're facing a major budget crisis coming up. But they're really angry that he's on the campaign trail. He didn't even qualify for the debate, which, I mean, what is it, 2%? Poll 2%.
Yeah, I know. It's like 2%, 160 or 300,000 contributors, individuals. But
it's not much.
But
I was going to just relate to you one thing I saw the other day. It was hilarious. These two comedians in New York.
Is this New York City?
Yeah. Held this news conference right in the middle of, right in front of the City Hall. And they said, we're going to rename City Hall. And they had this big unveiling, and it was hilarious. But they unveiled the new name for the City Hall, and they're going to call the new City Hall Iowa. And they said that's the only way we're going to get Bill de Blasio back in New York City to actually do his job.
Now, that's funny, but, you know, I don't know. If I live in New York, am I safer with Bill de Blasio in Iowa or Bill de Blasio causing trouble in New York City.
It's a toss-up. It's a toss-up.
Well, a mayor's supposed to be on the job doing the job. Of course, the other mayor that's not doing the job is Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of that sprawling metropolis, South Bend, Indiana, where every year he's been mayor, crime has gone up.
Yes, what a
you
track record. Yes, I did.
Let's make America South Bend.
It's just amazing that all these folks, these minor candidates, have gotten any traction at all. I mean, what were they, 21 running at one time? Wasn't that the number?
Right.
I mean, the fact that they think that they can get the nomination.
Yeah.
It just says something about liberals and their desire to change the country and I don't know, and what the electorate will accept, you know?
The amazing imagery to me of this is going to be Bill de Blasio, who's this big, jerky New Yorker. I guess we've used that term twice today, but that probably fits. In Iowa, I mean, he's a New Yorker through and through, and of the most obnoxious liberal type. And he's out there with the farmers in Iowa. How is that going
two
over?
Two or three then? Show up, I think, to his events, maybe.
You're right. On a lucky day.
Yeah. Where he gets his arrogance and his chutzpah to believe that he can attract enough votes, I don't know. I mean, the guy's ego must be in another universe.
What he lacks in intelligence, he makes up in hubris. Right?
Exactly. And I think that's probably explains a lot of why he got elected in New York City.
Yeah.
They just liked his hubris. They liked his unabashed socialism. I mean, he's a Marxist, basically. Yeah. The guy is unapologetic.
Well, which of the Democratic presidential contenders aren't Marxists.
Well, it was so funny to watch the news media when de Blasio first made that comment about there's plenty of money, but it's just in the wrong hands. I mean, that's something, you know, literally
like,
Joseph
like
Stalin would have said, you know?
See, Bill de Blasio would come into this studio, and he would, like, pick your pocket, right?
Well, I think it was Michelle Malkin said, what if somebody got on a bus, and you were sitting on a bus, and somebody got on a bus and immediately said, well, there's a lot of money here, but it's just in the wrong hands. That was a great, great little illustration.
I think that would be a criminal offense, don't you?
I think yes. It's implied robbery, and that's exactly what, and I think that may explain why an incompetent guy like him with a huge ego got elected in New York City.
Okay, huge ego and a campaign with a failure to launch problem. There's an article at Real Clear Politics about another campaign failure to launch. A guy by the name of Tom Steyer spent $12 million late announcing his run. His campaign has failed to launch. And I guess he made like $1 billion being a hedge fund guy. Means you're smart, you know how to manipulate markets. That's about all. And you got lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you earned. Maybe you've got the ability to understand it. I don't know. Maybe it's not luck. Maybe it's all skill. Could be. We'll give him that. So, but I've just got to read the starting point of this. It's really funny. Even before liberal billionaire Tom Steyer was shut out of the next Democratic debate, there were telltale signs his rocket-fueled six-week presidential bid was failing to launch. This is the key. At last weekend's Democratic National Committee summer confab in San Francisco, that's where Steyer lives, his campaign had a fancy booth complete with a snazzy Tom 2020 photo backdrop, but only a handful of supporters were happily snapping pictures, and there was no sign waving foot soldiers to compete with Kamala Harris's K-Hive entourage. So again, this is a guy, he's a Yalie. He went to Yale. He was a captain of the soccer team. He went to Stanford Business School. You know, nothing against Stanford Business School. Mm-hmm. Some of my best friends went to Stanford Business School.
You're right. I mean, to have the ego that makes you think that you can get into public office and to surround yourself with people who encourage you and say, yeah, Tom, you could be president, to to have that kind of lack of judgment and that lack of knowledge of the electorate is pretty breathtaking, but it's so typical of these candidates.
Well, he could be president of a hedge fund in Monaco, but I don't think president of the United States of America.
And you would think, I mean, he's a big environmentalist wacko. Mm-hmm. The impeachment has been
his big deal.
That's his push.
I forgot to read in the Constitution that it's a high crime and misdemeanor that's required.
Yeah, I don't think he cares about the Constitution.
You don't think so?
No. But I mean, it's...
I think you're right about that.
You would think on the face of it that it would appeal to a certain amount of Democratic voters. But...
Here's the key to these guys. The word of the day is likable.
Mm-hmm.
He's not likable.
No, he's not.
But now... Of course, you got to go back and say, let's look at the likability rating of these folks. Now, Joe Biden, I think, probably is likable, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not unlikable.
Yeah, kind of a bumbling likable.
He's a bumbling Uncle Joe Biden, right. Sleepy Joe, you know. Okay, I'm not sure if any of the other are likable. I mean, I'm trying to think. So, maybe Andrew Yang. I think Andrew Yang is kind of likable.
He is.
So we got two.
But they all have a certain segment of that far-left electorate that they are claiming, but none of them can claim very much of it.
So Bernie Sanders is not likable.
No.
No.
Elizabeth Warren.
Not likable.
No.
Fingernails on a chalkboard. The only person Democratic candidate who's less likable than Elizabeth Warren is Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. who's got to go down as perhaps the most unlikable party nominee in modern American history.
Oh, but you know, I bet you in a quiet moment when she's sitting there in an unprotected moment, I bet she still thinks she could jump back in this race.
Oh, she does. She does. But you know, to talk about failure to launch, if she jumped back in.
Oh, man.
Yikes. It would be even more humiliating mm-hmm. than her loss to Donald Trump. Of course, you got to treasure those magic moments when she had a meltdown that night. All the stories about that. Julian Castro, back to likability. I don't think that likable. Maybe not that unlikable. Spartacus, Cory Booker. Well,
especially when he comes out and says, gives a list of Trump supporters and basically doxes them.
That's a mean thing to do.
Oh, Lordy. It was his brother that
did it. I'm
going to
downgrade him.
But he approved it and said, that's a great thing to do.
Cory, Spartacus, Booker, not broadly likable, I don't think. He's just like, he looks in the mirror too much and admires what he sees.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know that.
And policy-wise, he just jumps all around. There's never really any consistency at all.
So Amy Klobuchar, the using the comb to eat the salad, being mean to staffers, not likable. Beto O'Rourke? Oh, my goodness.
I still have absolutely no idea how he got so many votes in Texas.
So I'll tell you, Kamala Harris, she's not likable either.
No.
Pete Buttigieg, he's kind of not likable either. To me, I mean, he's, holier than thou.
He's
going after faith groups. And get serious, man.
Moralizing, pretentious. I mean,
I like the you can go down the long list of that guy.
Oh, it's all.
So these are irritating people. Now, the likable. This will shock you, Ben. Maybe. She's loony, but she's not unlikable. Marianne Williamson is a likable person.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, she would be.
Got a huge following.
She would be she would not be an annoying dinner guest.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to hang out with her past dinner. But
no, or probably buy many of her various products for sale. The pyramids and the aromatherapy and all that.
I think Tulsi Gabbard's likable.
She is. She is.
And particularly likable for the way she took down Kamala Harris at that last debate.
Yeah.
Now she's complaining she didn't get fairly treated for this debate. That's probably true, but It's politics ain't beanbag, as they used to say, right?
Right. And just a pretty articulate person, Tulsi Gabbard is. You may disagree with her foreign policy, but she's very articulate in expressing it, and that really doesn't get you anything in this Democratic primary. Articulate doesn't help.
And the bald guy who's not a complete lunatic, Congressman John Delaney, he's sort of likable.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of.
Yeah.
Not that much, but anyway. So, well, look, we'll have the next week. We'll be able to tell you, because you can't. You know, we'll do the job you can't or won't do. We'll have the results of this the third Democratic debate, and we'll tell you about that. But meanwhile, Ben, thank you so much for sitting in for Doug today.
And, thanks for having me.
Perhaps you come back.
Appreciate it.
This has been the Battleground State Report, and we'll talk to you next week. I'm Michael Patrick Leahy.